Lisa. How are you, Lisa?
Hey, Alex, I'm great. It's great to be here.
It's
very
exciting. Oh, I'm very well. I'm much better now that I've got you here, if I'm being honest. I know, we're so cute and lovely. So today's the start of National Reconciliation Week. So you've brought us a story that's going to intertwine with that, right?
That's exactly right. And of course, National Reconciliation Week is a really important time for us as Sydneysiders and as Australians to think about our role in the community as citizens and how we relate to Aboriginal people, because this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Yeah. And so it's really important that we work together with Aboriginal people to make the best of our nation. So on that sort of, you know, full on note, I just thought we might talk about Kerengering.
All right.
And I have to confess, I didn't know much about her before I started thinking about this segment and what we could share for Reconciliation Week. But Kerengering was a really important woman in Sydney's history, and particularly Sydney's early history. So let me tell you a little bit about her. I don't normally like defining women by their men, but in this case, I think Kerengering's relations do provide some helpful context.
Okay, we'll forgive you just this once.
Okay, thank you. So most people, I think, have heard of Bennelong.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so there's Bennelong Point where the Sydney Opera House is and so on. So Bennelong was a Wongal man, and he was actually abducted by Governor Arthur Phillip from Manly, and he later became a really important diplomatic figure, forging relationships between the Eora and the British people. And some people might say that Bennelong was really, in fact, the most famous Aboriginal man in Sydney's history.
Mm.
So, you know, pretty important figure in Sydney's early history indeed. So Kerengering was Bennelong's sister.
Oh, okay.
So Bennelong had several sisters, but Kerengering was probably the most well-known. And she was a Wongal woman born around 1771, and she lived right into the 1830s. So she lived until she became an elder in the community and lived into her 60s. And what's really interesting, she remained really connected to her country and culture. And we've got an article about her in the Dictionary of Sydney. Author Keith Vincent Smith describes her as a notable figure around Sydney and also Kissing Point, that's around the sort of Putney area today, until the late 1830s when she was in her 60s. And I think it's really interesting that we haven't sort of perhaps maybe clocked her as part of Sydney's history. And I think part of the reason for that is really the vagaries and the biases of white historical documents.
Yeah, so of course, yeah.
First fleet journals, letters, dispatches. And I think that can partially explain the silences. But I think historians are slowly sort of looking back, sifting through these sources where they can and making connections between names and slight references and small descriptions to actually build up pictures of these of people like Kerengering. We know that she was an Eora fisherwoman. She was regularly seen in a nawi or a canoe on Sydney Harbour, and there are descriptions of her how she would go out in the canoe paddling and singing to help keep time. She fished on the harbour often with her young children by her side in the vessel, and we know that she shared her catch of fish with her brother, so she still had a strong connection to her brother. Bennelong actually went over to England, and when he finally returned, Kerengering was absolutely overjoyed and kind of rushed down to greet him. And so we can assume that Kerengering would have been sort of really closely watching some of her brother's diplomatic efforts. We can't be sure what she thinks about them, but, you know, I think she was probably more on the side of Bennelong's second wife, Barangaroo, keen to stick to her culture. So we have other descriptions of Kurangarang, that she attended funerals and mourned the loss of her mob. And later in life, she was still continuing to practice culture up at Kissing Point, where she was observed singing and dancing at a corroboree, and she wore a possum skin cloak and had traditional ornaments in her hair. And at that time, in the 1830s, she was an elder of the community and well recognised. So I think it's really interesting to think about women like Kurangarang and their really important role in keeping community together and sharing culture. Kurangarang had two husbands. She had several children. And we know that one of her sons was later recorded as camping around Bondi and Rose Bay in the 1870s. So this is now moving, you know, forward into the sort of late 19th century. And so Kurangarang's cultural knowledge was carried and continued well into the late 19th century by her children around Sydney. And so Kurangarang's story is one of many Sydney stories. And I think as we embrace National Reconciliation Week, I think it's really imperative that we all learn more about Aboriginal culture and respect the culture and history of Sydney's Aboriginal people.
Oh,
and of course,
absolutely.
The Dictionary of Sydney is a good place to start.
So. Yes, indeed it is. And honestly, sometimes sometimes I'm like sitting around with my friends and we're talking about whatever, and it honestly just makes me really sad. Like sometimes I just think about the fact that, you know, as you were saying before, you know, a lot of the early history has been whitewashed and lost because of, you know, white prejudice and et cetera. And sometimes it just makes me really sad that we don't get to hear those stories in, you know, if you know what I mean. So definitely a good place to start. And this is a good week to, if you have kind of put it on your backlist, then definitely, jump onto Dictionary Sydney. Hey, Lisa, thank you so much.
Thanks, Alex. It's great to be with you.